Welcome to A Moment with Modern Mentors, a podcast series by Digital Collective Co., where we soak up wisdom, anecdotes, and actionable tips from Australian startups, female founders, business leaders, industry pioneers, and C-suite executives. In season three of A Moment with Modern Mentors, we go behind the scenes. We ask our guests what it takes to be a leader. Not just the gloss and the glamour of leadership, but the setbacks, the failings, the insecurity, the stories that make up the person that they are today and what it took to get there, the hard work, and then the reward. We can't wait to share A Moment with Modern Mentors behind the scenes. Stay tuned for all the episodes. Hi, John.
Hey, Mia. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you're doing.
Thank you, firstly, for the opportunity. My name's John Bonacera. I'm currently the general manager of football at the Manly Warringah Sea Eagles, which is a rugby league team in the National Rugby League, or the NRL, as people might know. Without assuming that people have any knowledge about rugby league, is a 17-team competition with 16 in various parts of Australia and one in New Zealand. Been running since 1908, so 115 years. It was an offshoot of rugby union in its formation, but it is a pretty well-known competition now. And the club level where I work, it's a fairly fast-paced and demanding role. Prior to this role, where I've been for nearly 6 years now, I spent 8 years in a similar role at another club in the same organisation, the Canberra Raiders. Lastly, but prior to that, I was a police officer for almost 12 years. So I've had a kind of mixed period of working life post-university. So uni came before all of those things. Degrees in communications, in sports journalism and sports coaching applied science, which is, I guess, where I'm applying my trade now.
Thank you. That's an awesome intro. And I'm so glad that you gave me the whole synopsis, because when we first met, which was how many years ago? A long time ago, you were cops.
I was.
And this podcast, A Moment with Modern Mentors, this season three, is all about behind the scenes. You know, I'm interviewing people that have had an interesting journey in their leadership roles, and you sprung to mind very much because you've had a lot of experience leading large groups of people, but not only large groups of people, but also a community-based people. In terms of a common thread through the roles that you just described, I feel like community is at the heart of it.
Without a doubt.
Do you want to talk to me a little bit about what leadership means to you as a starting point and what you've learned over the years of looking, you know, in all those jobs, what leadership has kind of developed in your mind and what it means?
It's probably not an easy thing to define, is it, leadership? Working at various organisations through different points in time, you get a feel for environments and for cultures. And when you're in a good one, it's probably difficult to put words to it, but it's almost tangible. You can feel that people are on the same page. And I think that often stems from having good leaders. So when I've worked as part of a team, and obviously even as a leader in certain parts, you really are only part of a team. And I look at your role as being able to facilitate the growth of that team and the growth of the individuals within it, just by providing a really solid platform and a base from which people operate. And that can be used in a sporting context or in a business context. I mean, a policing context, as we spoke about before. The thing for me is, when organisations are doing it well, it often stems from the top down, but it feels, because of good leadership, that it's actually from the bottom level up. So everybody at the bottom level that are working together with a common goal are keeping each other accountable, they're engaged, they understand the broader scope of what the organisation's trying to achieve, and they're prepared to call each other out. In that call out, I think the main context is people take feedback the way it's intended, which is just to make us all better.
I wonder, when you're describing a leadership there, I mean, I know a lot of your personality over the years of knowing you, and obviously we haven't been always in touch, but there's this general sense of the kind of person you are, which is quite a positive, upbeat, outgoing, and very inclusive leadership style, I would imagine. What do you think are the strengths or the traits that you have as a leader from your perspective, if you were to describe yourself as a leader, that you think have kind of made the leadership a success?
Probably the hardest subject to talk about, isn't it, yourself? You never really want to give yourself a rap. Or I appreciate the traits that you spoke about. And I think that I've never felt ever in any role that I've been in that, for want of a better phrase, that people work for me. I feel like we work together, and I've always felt that. And so I make a point of never, certainly never intentionally, treating people that I work with anything but respect and with a level of engagement that gives them their piece of the pie. When I explain to someone, look, this is what the role entails, this is how I feel or we feel as an organisation that it needs to be done, and here are some of the things within that that you'll be accountable for, that accountability is clear and it's concise, and I'm happy to work with that person as I hope they are with me and me achieving my individual goals for the collective good. I'm always allowing people to do their job. I don't micromanage. I may be demanding at times, and the expectation is high because certainly the organisation that I work for, we want to be world class. And in order to be world class, it means that we're producing a really high standard day in, day out. And you're dealing with minutiae and detail all the time. And they're the things that often get missed in respect of organisations that maybe can tighten the screws a little bit. Those are the things that I really focus on, not the bigger picture items, but all of the grassroots, smaller one percenters that come together, you know, to form the product that you're looking to achieve.
I do want to talk about your experience in working for the police, but I do want to just start with where you're at the moment with Manly Sea Eagles and just what that role, what it does, like what your role is, how you play a part in the team. And you know, obviously you're a general manager there, so it's an integral role. Can you talk us through a little bit about the day-to-day and what that encompasses and give us a bit of kind of insight into your role there?
In rugby league circles, being a general manager, it actually means different things at different clubs. So it is unique in the essence that I have a title that's similar to some really big icons in rugby league, people like a Phil Gould, for example. If people who do know rugby league, they would know Phil Gould straight away. And whilst we have a similar title as a head of football or a GM of football, our roles probably differ quite greatly. For me, I would view my key thing is probably being a point of connection or glue for the organisation. The football department operates somewhat independently in regards to what the goals are. And without the other end of the building, I'll say they have a very integral part in keeping the club alive, in facilitating what the football department requires. And with that, sometimes there's competing interests. And I'm that point of negotiation between football and sponsorship, between football and community, as you spoke about before, between football and membership, between football and corporate, between the NRL department and the pathways. We're hopefully forging careers for young footballers on their journey, both male and female now. And being that point of contact or that point of connection, that glue that keeps the systems and the processes that we have in place rolling, again, allows people to be accountable for their roles within that. And hopefully I'm able to oversee what we're delivering at a larger level by just ensuring that we're all doing the smaller piece as well. And then, you know, eventually the outcomes take care of themselves. So if I had to say it in one word, it would just be to be the glue.
And with that glue, I mean, it sounds, you kind of say it in quite a casual way, but I can imagine the glue is actually the hardest part of the whole business, right? Because you do, like you described, have those competing objectives. You've got sports people that are focused on, you know, scoring goals, and then you've got sponsorship that are focused on selling product, and then you've got ticket sales and so on. You've got sports people coming up through the ranks who aren't, you know, sports people yet, and they're on the journey, and yet you're the glue in the middle of all that. What made you the right person for that role, and what were they looking for in you that you had? It was it a culmination of your previous experiences? Tell us a little bit about that.
There's definitely, in any role, and this is probably one of the harder things to achieve, is that there are a disciplinary aspect to what we do as individuals, both as employees, whether you're a professional athlete or you're working in digital marketing, it doesn't really matter. There's parameters or guidelines under which we need to operate. And there's always elements of my role, of your role, and of any role within any organisation that people generally don't like to do. And often the things that you don't like to do underpin the success of the organisation, the success of the team, the small minutiae and detail that, as I said to you, when you're not operating at your best and you're not world class, they're the things that are slipping through the cracks. I think for a person in a type of role like this, it's ideally being really organised, being a people person and someone that people can relate to, potentially from all walks of life in a sporting environment, because You know, as you described, I'm working with boys and girls that are coming through as 15, 16, 17 year olds and attempting to forge a career and hopefully a professional one at that. And they're, as you described again, not yet professionals. So they're in a professional environment. They're seeing it. They're hearing it. They're feeling it, but they're learning to do that. And I guess my role is to help facilitate that journey, not only for the players, but for the staff. With the staff working in part-time roles while they're fulfilling other opportunities, whether they're at university. For example, a physiotherapist might be working in their own clinic and then they're working with our junior sides in the evenings because they have a love of rugby league or a love of sport and their skill set is really suitable to the needs of a junior side. We would look then over time to hopefully promote that person into a full-time opportunity when it became available. So helping nurture all of those relationships. And just ultimately making sure that that's a bad habit of mine, for want of a better phrase, just making sure that everyone's happy in the zoo and understands their role.
I can imagine that with having to kind of change gears quite a lot through a day, you know, you're coming across a lot of different types of people in one day. That requires you to be on your toes, or maybe that comes as second nature to you. Do you think that's something that's kind of inherent to your leadership style or your personality even, or is that something that you've developed over the years? I know that you mentioned before that you're, you know, it's a lot about being a people person, but, you know, in being a people person, you've got to read the behaviors of people.
Yep.
What are you kind of leaning on then to kind of be able to switch gears like that?
It is a good question. I think certainly operating in modern organizations, the capacity to be able to, in a role like mine, to be able to manage up and manage down. So for me, managing up would be working with the head coach, working with the CEO, and then subsequently the board or the owners of the organization, who obviously have a vested interest in the success of the organization. It's not only financial, but it's a broader scope aspect when you're working with a very public beast that people actually want to know about. And how much of that do you share? How much and what of it is important to what we do? And how can we use it to leverage the other things that we need to achieve? And then in the opposition to that, working, managing down and working with staff that I'm surrounded with, the people that I work with every day, along with the playing group in a professional capacity, and then down to, as we spoke about, juniors that are coming up. Having spent a lot of time in rugby league as a player as well, not a very good one, but one nonetheless, I was able to meet people, as we said, from all walks of life. It helped me develop those skills. And then I think having worked in the police for 11 or 12 years, whilst inherently I probably am a little bit of an extrovert and an outgoing person, I was able to develop those skills in interview capacity, in turning up cold to a scene and establishing what had happened, metaphorically speaking, putting out fires on arrival and quelling something that, you know, might have been about to burst. Having those skills to read the room, read the situation, whether to come in hard and shut things down quickly or just get there and ask some questions and be a little more touchy-feely depending on the situation. And I think you learn to read individuals and moments as you grow in life and in your role. It allows you then hopefully to make the right tactful decision more often than not. And also you have skills to maybe, if you've taken it in a particular direction, a conversation or a difficult conversation at that, you might be able I'm not going to say apologize, but you can read that whatever you've said has gone down the wrong way. And there might be a heightened reaction or there might be body language from the other person involved. And you can tell that what you've said hasn't hit the mark or what you were looking for. I would potentially call that out. So I might say to someone, I can see that what I've told you, you know, has disappointed you, or I can see that what I've told you isn't sitting well with you. Can we talk about that a little more? Is there something else that you would prefer? Is there another direction we can go? Obviously, this is all dependent situationally on what we're referencing, but I think just being open and transparent and authentic allows people to feel that, you know, you're on their side and you're not working against them, but you're working with them to achieve a mutually agreeable outcome.
I think what you're describing there is a high level of EQ, though.
My daughters and wife won't agree with you.
And certainly, in my experience, that level of EQ comes from two things. One is it's, you know, something that was always part of you, and it's maybe something you brought up with, or it's something you've learned and realized along the way through potentially some negative experiences that have happened in your life that have woken you up to a new way of looking at things. What do you think it is?
Yeah, well, I think obviously life experiences, good, bad, indifferent, they shape how we all respond, and what we understand to be the ways of the world are obviously inherent around what our environment is, where we went to school, how we went to school, the people we mixed with, and then the life that we've chosen thereafter. We're all products of our environment, and we learn from our mistakes and we learn from our challenges. Yeah, and we also learn, you know, good things from good people.
And have you got any kind of key things that have happened along the way that you're like, that definitely, you know, put me in a new direction or, you know, changed me in some way?
I could probably hand point to a few moments in life, you know, where I might have made a rash decision or a life-changing one. So I think leaving the police was a really big decision for me. I probably felt for the first 8, 9, 10 years that I was a lifetime police officer. Obviously, the scope within a role or within a job in the police is, you know, it's exponential in terms of the types of work that you're able to achieve and what you can do and the directions you can go. I worked really hard in about year 7, year 8 of the time, as in not at school, in my 8th and 9th or 7th and 8th years in the police, to join the Tactical Operations Unit, which, for those of you who don't know that term, it's the New South Wales Police equivalent of SWAT. The long and the short of it is I spent 2 years really working hard to get in there. And when I did get in, I spent 3 months getting out. So I established then that it probably wasn't the environment for me. Without going into any depth about why or how or what was happening in my life around that time, there were a number of competing interests, at home. I had a pregnant wife. There were lots of detail that were adding to the way that I was feeling, but I just knew environmentally that I probably wasn't a good fit for them and perhaps there wasn't as good a fit for me. So that was a real trigger point for me to say, well, maybe this necessarily isn't for me forever. And I went back into a plain clothes unit that I'd been in previously. And fortunately, they accepted me with open arms, which was very lucky because I obviously left them to pursue other opportunities. And while I sat in that group again and I was working and certainly giving the best of myself, I kind of knew that I needed to look for something different. And I could feel a noise within myself where I was like, I need to pursue other opportunities before I make a poor decision or I do something wrong whereby this opportunity may not exist anymore. So I wanted to be the one to leave before I potentially needed to get pushed. And I could hear myself thinking things internally that I had heard other people speak out loud when I was a young police officer. And I remember thinking at the time, you know, if you don't like it, you know, why don't you just fuck off? And I could hear those voices in my own head. And I referenced that it's not your prerogative to ruin other people's experience. You need to make some decisions for yourself. And I had always been involved in rugby league as a player and as a strength and conditioning coach. And a few opportunities were born of my relationships in football and in sport and in other things. And I took on a bit of a business in personal training, and I was involved in rugby league part-time, and I was still working as a police officer. And as a result of those things combined, I was fortunate enough to be recommended for an interview for a potential position in a full-time opportunity in rugby league. And I ended up getting that role, and then it changed my life and my family's life from there on when we moved to Canberra.
Wow. So that was when you moved to the Canberra Raiders, was that from the police?
It was. So that was the end of 2010.
I was going to ask you that whether leaving the police force, when you had imagined it going to be a lifelong career, whether there was some kind of mourning that you went through at the end of that career, you know, segment, let's call
without
it.
Without a doubt, I miss the people. There's a lot of good people in an organisation like the police, and I'm sure that I do miss the work, and I miss, you know, going into work of a morning. And look, to be honest, I do get a little bit where I am anyway, but not knowing what's going to happen is actually a very cool thing to do. Like, you can arrive at work and it might be at the start of a night shift, and 2 hours later, you're chasing an Eastern Skyline across the Anzac Bridge at 160 kilometres an hour and they've just robbed a jewellery store. And it's like amazing, you know, and there is a thrill element to that and the uncertainty of that. And I've never been a 9-to-5 desk person, and I've always known that. Changing from all the environments within the police, so from a uniformed police officer into a plain clothes opportunity into a drug unit where we investigated mid-level drug supply and did lots of things in and around that, which I won't speak about in depth, but, you know, running controlled operations and big jobs where we're working off intelligence-based information and, you know, formulating a really good picture about what certain people are up to and working and devising a plan as to how we might counteract that. And then, as I said, spending 2 years working really hard to get into tactical operations, getting out. So lots of change within that time and trying to be agile in my thinking. I mourn not being in regular contact with a lot of those people because they really are good people and I learn a lot from many of them. Ultimately, I knew that I'd hit my ceiling in the role or the roles that I'd been doing and that I needed to look for something else that was going to float my boat.
And I mean, you've moved from one very adrenaline pumping industry to another adrenaline pumping industry. And obviously you said that you're not a classic 9-to-5 person at all. And this is, you know, you like the spirit of new things. And obviously you also studied a sports science. So football was your passion as a side hustle, let's say. And so it did feel like quite a natural step. But I mean, it did sound like you were saying there was quite a few moving parts that were involved in kind of getting that next opportunity.
Firstly, if you are looking for a career change or an opportunity or you're coming from a period of study and you're taking a particular direction, the first thing that you have to be is available. You need to be actively looking. You need to be actively networking, particularly in the right industries. You know, if you do know people, it's never a bad thing to reach out and say to them, you're looking for anything or you'd like to be considered for opportunities that might come across their desk that they think you might be suitable for. And establishing those relationships over time is really important to, you know, taking next steps, pursuing new opportunities. Sometimes if you have and you are fortunate enough to have a period of time where you might be able to give of your time. I've had people mature age come and work with me one day a week in an internship style role. They're looking for a career change at 35, 40, and which is what I did at 35. Mm-hmm. What it facilitates is a day-to-day understanding of the machinations of this type of work, your suitability and its suitability to you. I think all of those things come with experience, and being able to experience it is the key. But again, you need to be open to that. You can't be closed-minded. When you're walking into a new industry, a new environment, you need to be open to new ideas, new ways of doing things. And even now, as in what I would call as a semi-established facilitator/manager, I'm learning new things all the time. I'm fortunate in that I get to work with different people. And in sporting terms and in rugby league terms, I've worked with some amazing people and names like Ricky Stewart, Des Hasler, David Ferner, his brother Don is the CEO of the Canberra Raiders, now with Anthony Seibold and Tony Mestrov. Like, these people have all had varied and wide experience across multiple facets of the game, multiple industries, sports, codes, and they've learnt so much. And every day that I'm working with them, I'm taking things away that I can add to my own repertoire that I either potentially like, I might dislike, but either way, they impact the way that I operate. While someone else's way might not be your way, some of the things that you see other people achieve, and then you see how driven they are, dogged they are, organized, just how they won't take no for an answer in certain capacities, and they'll always find a way to make things happen. They're the traits of a winner or someone who, you know, is looking to achieve great things, and they won't leave any stone unturned. So all of that for me has been a great grounding, and I feel really fortunate to have had those opportunities to work with people like that.
Would you call those people some of the mentors that you've had in your life, official or unofficial?
Absolutely.
Do you seek those people out, or you're fortunate enough to kind of have networked into your world, or do you think you've made them happen?
I think it's a bit of both. You take things from everybody that you work with, and the one thing that I'm really big on is not burning bridges. So I spoke to you about when I left the cops, I could feel and hear myself, and I was thinking, this isn't for me anymore. But I was really conscious of not taking people in and around me on that ride. I tried to maintain my professionalism and for want of a better explanation, to stay above the line when I was at work, and I could take my frustrations away singularly so that I could deal with them offline. I was presenting the best version of myself at that time at work. And I think when you're working with people that you would consider mentors, if you're not burning bridges, you can always go back and call on those people. I have conversations today with people like Don Ferner, who is the CEO and has been the CEO of the Canberra Raiders in the National Rugby League for 20 plus years. he's someone that obviously I admire, someone who has wonderful advice, someone who has seen the evolution of the game and the people within it from a semi-professional setting right through now until, you know, the game itself, you know, is under goldfish bowl scrutiny every day. And he's someone that if it's not in a mentoring position, he genuinely cares. Ricky Stewart is no different as a former player and a head coach of hundreds and hundreds of games. Des Hasler is the same. These names, whilst they may not resonate for some of the listeners, if you were to look up these names, you know, in particular people like Ricky Stewart, Des Hasler, you'll see that they're the greats of the sport that I'm fortunate enough to work in. To call them friends and or mentors is a real privilege. You don't survive anywhere in any industry for 20, 30, 40 years if you're not staying agile and picking up on the vibe within the organization or the organizations that you work with within that industry, and you're not learning, you know, from not only your own mistakes, but from the challenges that you face along the way. And those people are wonderful examples of that. So, you know, I get to learn from them by communicating with them, but I also get to learn from their actions and see how they operate.
As you're talking, listening to you, it's, you know, that long-term relationship. I can relate to that quite, you know, strongly that over the years, especially if you're working in industry, those long-term relationships are often fundamental to your ongoing success. But within that, and especially if you've spent a long time within a particular industry, it is possible, and I'm imagining that you've seen this quite a lot in your industries, that there are people or situations that you can't agree with or you don't align with, and yet you still have to maintain somewhat of a professional, outgoing approach. How do you deal with that if you're, you know, in a disagreement with something or that someone's attitudes and expressions of their opinions and leadership are just completely adverse to what yours are? How do you cope?
Well, firstly, I don't think there's any one right way to do things. There's many ways for things to be done, and someone's methodology or principles about the way that they want to achieve something, it varies and differs greatly, perhaps to mine, perhaps to yours, and then perhaps to somebody else in the same role as them. So being open-minded and understanding that my way is not the way, being able to accept others' opinion, to listen, to engage, and sometimes, of course, certainly in volatile and fast-paced industries, your moral compass is challenged. When it gets into the red, sometimes it's difficult. But I think in order to be effective as a leader and in order to be effective in a business-to-client or business-to-business style relationship or even individual-to-individual, you've probably only got one or two blow-ups in you where that person, that agency, they actually know, oh, actually, I've hit a raw nerve here because I've known John or I've known Mia for X period of time and I've never seen her respond like this. So when you are challenged that way, I think it's important to be transparent and to say, hey, what you're telling me, that's not for me. I won't be partaking or we won't be partaking as an organization, and these are the reasons why. And if that or this particular thing that we're speaking about is a deal breaker for you, that's no problem for me either. You're taking this in a direction that we don't want to go. And whilst we're not philosophically aligned, I can't go there. Mm. I think people appreciate that. It's obviously easy for me to sit in front of a camera and say it now. It's not that easy to have the conversation at the time, particularly if there's and more often than not there is, if there's a financial interest with a client, if there is a long-term relationship as we spoke about and this potentially severs that, it's a hard conversation. But if you've been authentic, shown integrity, been respectful, and you've engaged with that person or organisation for an extended period, hopefully that one day they'll walk away and they'll appreciate the way that it was done.
And I think it's like, as you say, it's obviously, it's easy to say that or explain that situation when you're, you know, you're in this situation. Have you come up against situations where you're making a judgment call based on your belief system, based on what maybe you think is the right thing, but it, you know, who knows whether you're speaking on behalf of the actual feelings of the club or the police force or the business you're working for? Does something resonate with you with that comment?
I won't bring up any individual things in the police, but obviously every police officer works with a degree of autonomy because they're turning up to a job on the street or in some sort of situation, often in someone's home, and they have to make decisions. Now that they're given guides and they're told, well, look, you know, in this situation, perhaps you could look at this or look at this, but you're the one who is there dealing with the situation at hand, and we make mistakes. And sometimes you do say the wrong thing, you do the wrong thing, and there's hell to pay down the track. But there's a degree of autonomy in what you do, and certainly in any managerial role, you're always, always juggling balls around the competing interests of the organisation, what's right for the football department at the same time as what the corporate team needs in a football capacity is always hard. I think one of the things that's hardest in the line of work that I do now is that our staff and players work contractually. Everyone is working to timeframes, and many of those are offset. Many of those are aligned with, for example, the position of a head coach taking control of the football department for the next period of time. We'll align staff underneath that banner, and some of them might be short of it. Some of them may go past it, but you try not to, because obviously the nature of the game itself, it's highly volatile. You can be the best coach in the game and 15 months later, you're sacked. It's a ruthless industry and it waits for no one. Having those contractual agreements and timeframes, and having players that are playing the 2023 season knowing that they're not signed for 2024 is a really fine line. It's a really difficult point to negotiate. They're always looking to secure their future and to have something solid to hang their hat on. And you as an organisation might be waiting to see what level of performance is coming through the early part of the year prior. You might not meet.
Yeah.
And you get to a point when you're getting to, let's say, for example, May or June of a football year, keeping in mind that a football year runs from tomorrow, November 1, is the start of the 2024 NRL season, through to the 31st of October in the same year. So the middle of the year per se is around that June mark. It's the middle of the season proper. And we'll be making decisions and letting players know our intentions for next year or our intentions for the years beyond, or alternatively, we'll be letting them know that there's nothing here for them the year after. There's so many things that sit underneath that. So, for example, if I was to say to you, Mia, we really appreciate the efforts that you've provided over the last 2 to 3 seasons, but unfortunately, we don't have anything for you next year. These are the reasons why, or this is what we have that we believe at the moment is more suitable to the way we want to play football. We want to help you get another club. We know that you've got more in you, albeit that it's not here. We want to help that. But that moment and the way that you as a player or as an employee react, you can become quite cancerous and difficult over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 months while you're still involved with the club. And if you respond in a way that's not conducive to the way we're taking the organisation, then one, you're already proving the reasons. Two, you're not helping yourself, because any club, and I think this is the naivety of some in the world, if I know someone at the Canberra Raiders or I know someone at the Melbourne Storm or any other club in the organisation, I will ring them and say, what is Mia like? Who's Mia McLeod? I already know what she's like as a footballer. What I want to know is what she's like as a person.
Yeah.
And it's naive to think that another organisation won't say, don't touch her with a barge pole. Or ideally, you're getting a great person. Her best football's ahead of her. We really think she's got something to offer. It's just that we've got some roadblocks in place for her. There's people in the same position as her that unfortunately are just doing a job that we need. And unfortunately for her, it's just not the right organisation at the moment.
And that comes down to what you were saying about keeping those bridges intact.
Yes, staying above the line.
Yeah. I hear when you're saying this, you know, you've got to have a fair amount of self-confidence and self-belief to be able to deliver these messages in a way that, you know, can you know, with a very emotional outcome potentially for an emotional industry where, you know, like you say, everything's kind of
people's livelihoods.
Yeah, riding on a very short window of potential enthusiasm for their skills. And how do you kind of manage that yourself? I mean, you've obviously, you know, got a lot of experience in facing adversity and situations where you've got to have a game face. Are there ongoing meditations or
absolutely
keep okay?
Without a doubt, in order to achieve anything in 2023, regardless of what you do or the industry you're in, you need to be able to downregulate. You need to be able to, you know, spend time with your family or friends. I have my dog asleep next to me on the ground. He's a really great release for me. Someone who shows me that the simple things in life are often the best.
Yeah, and I heard actually that you've also got a brand new ice bath.
Yes. Yes. Hey, you've thrown something at me that I wasn't expecting there. Whatever, I used the term before, floats your boat. Whatever really interests you outside of work and outside of the pursuits that you're looking at daily, you've got to be able to make sure there's time. And there's sacrifice in every industry. It's never easy. The balance is never easy. The self-belief is never easy. I'm constantly questioning myself as to whether I'm right for the role that I'm in, or am I a genuine leader? Am I someone that people want to work with? How can I maintain my currency? The one thing that's happening for me as an administrator is I'm getting older and the players are getting younger. So my level of relatability is extending. Let's be honest, you know, how do I maintain my relevance in the industry that I'm in? How do I maintain a level of respect from an 18, 19 year old who knows nothing about me as an individual? So the one thing that I'm really structured in is the way that I live my life when no one else is watching. You mentioned an ice bath. I'll do that after training. So I physically train, one, because it's a great outlet. Two, because I want to be able to a degree, mix it with my daughters in their sporting pursuits and the things that they like to do. And so that, you know, we can jump on a bike together, or, you know, we can go down to the beach and have a swim, or we can go for a run together, or we've got a gym downstairs in the garage. I train with my wife several mornings a week. So those sort of pursuits, I'm really interested in them, primarily because I feel like they give me a great balance in life and they allow me to maintain a healthy mind in a decision-making process. It's a funny thing that early wake up and the capacity to get things done, you know, potentially before daylight in certain days and certain parts of the year, always hard to do, but you're always better when you've done it. That getting up in the morning and things like that, I struggle the same as I imagine everybody else does. I'm not I'm springing out of bed and I've got some mental barriers and things that I need to overcome. And I do simple things like, you know, leaving my training clothes out overnight. So that the first thing I see next to the bed in the morning and I go, I'm going to put those on. I know what I'm going to do. So I know the training. I'm not going to wake up and work out what I'm going to do. I know I'm going for a run. I know I'm going to go down to the park with my wife and walk the dog, and we're going to do a circuit down there at that time, or I'm going to lift weights or whatever it might be. It doesn't matter if it's sport related or other activities for somebody else. If you're planned and you're organized and you have that structure, I think it really helps. As you mentioned, the ice bath, it's just something that picked up over time. I've done a little bit of research on cold therapy. I'm obviously fortunate working in high performance sport, and I see what's happening for the athletes and other people that are using hot and cold theories around, you know, giving them opportunities to sleep well, have clarity of thought, and in an athlete's case, you know, flush out toxins and feel refreshed. A lot of the stuff that I've been reading around cold therapy sort of resonated for me, and I thought I'll give it a crack. So I've been doing it sort of probably every second day at the moment. So I've done, we've only had it about a month. I've probably done it about 10 or 12 times.
Wow.
It shocks the system. It does. The girls have been in and have done their little bits after soccer training or coming home from a run. And it's something that I can do with the kids as well. It's pretty easy. It's inexpensive. It's a bit of a laugh. Someone stands there, you know, splash ice water on each other and just a little offshoot. Something just to add that little bit extra to your day. And it takes 5 minutes because it can't stand it anymore.
I have done one ice bath for 3 minutes. I've sustained it. Can't say it's an enjoyable endeavor.
It's not. It's an effort. It's an effort. There's no question.
You're very proud of yourself at the end of it, don't you?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Probably hasn't gotten easier, but I'm making less noise.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So what do you think? I mean, we're coming kind of to the end, unfortunately, because this has really gone super quick and there's been probably a million other things I could ask you. But what do you think a couple of the key lessons you've learned in life have made you the leader that you are that you would like to share?
Everything is about people. Everything. Every conversation per se is a negotiation, and it's the way you approach it. And if you're open-minded and agile in your way of thinking and you're getting information back to you that you don't necessarily like or you don't necessarily agree with, there's always ways to mitigate that and to navigate that. Not everything has to end in an argument is probably what I'm going to say. Being accepting of other people's opinions. And the CEO that I'm working with now is a guy called Tony Mestrov. His way is not my way, but he is awesome. He is so effective, a great communicator. He's straight between the eyes. You know exactly where you stand. Whilst that's not my way, I'm highly respectful of what he's been able to achieve in his past roles and in with us already in the last 18 months that he's been with us. And it's not easy. His role is not easy. Being a CEO anywhere is never easy. because you're making decisions on behalf of a bigger group. What I'm saying by that is it's okay for other people to have another way of doing things, and it doesn't have to be your way to be effective. And you can take snippets of it that are really resonate for you, that you can build into your own repertoire. And you can also learn from people that you might perceive to be not great at their role. And the shortcomings that you're identifying with them are things that I like to sacrosanct. So I'm not one to walk around and tell people me a shit. I don't do that. But if people approach me and say, I'm working through this, you know, with Mia or with John or whoever it might be, have you got any advice? Then I'd be prepared to sit down and help them navigate that situation. So one is everything's about people. Two, your way is not necessarily the right way. There are many ways to do things, and understanding other people's ways and their reasons can be really beneficial. And you can learn so much from allowing them the time to show you and to talk to you. And I think lastly, I'm just really big on integrity. I think it's the easiest way to deal with things. If you have to have hard conversations with people as part of your role, the best way to do it is transparency and to take them along for the ride. So this is where the organization is headed. These are the challenges that we're facing currently. These are, for example, the financial barriers that we're finding difficult at the moment to take the next step. And this is how we see you fitting into that bigger picture. And we would like you to come along for the ride. It's not going to be without its challenges or without its hurdles. We're certainly going to have our moments. But at day's end, philosophically, if we're aligned and we all know that we're pushing in the same direction, you know, ultimately we're going to get there.
Thank you so much. This has been such a great conversation. John Bonacera, General Manager of the Seagulls, we really appreciate you coming on A Moment with Modern Mentors behind the scenes. You've given us a great insight, glimpse into the world that is yours, and I really appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate the opportunity to come on.
Make sure you subscribe to our channel and stay tuned for more episodes from A Moment with Modern Mentors coming your way soon.